We present the news quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello and welcome to the news quiz. We start with an advert on Wirral Freecycle, read by Alan Smith.
Dark brown two-tier coffee table for sale. I could do with a good clean and maybe a touch-up.
Our thanks to Christina Beatty for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Andy Zaltzman and Desiree Birch. And opposite them, on my left, from the MASH report, Rachel Paris and Andrew Maxwell. Andy, why is the church hall booked again?
I think it might be the European elections that everyone is feverishly excited about. Who here has European election fever? It's a strange thing, this little outbreak of democracy that we're getting before we have democracy removed from us due to the results of a previous bit of democracy that some people say we must democratically go through, even though some people say it wasn't democratic. It's an awful lot of fun. And the Conservatives, finally, they've been saying leave means leave all along, and they've interpreted leave in one of its many meanings as completely give up. Labour's refused to debate its manifesto on air. Andrew Neil was complaining about that. Jeremy Corbyn today said we need to stop labelling ourselves as either leave or remain. And I think this might be the best solution, just compulsory national amnesia. Overshadowing all this is Theresa May's resignation, which when she announced her resignation, people thought it was an act of departure rather than just a general statement of mood. That is going on for a very long time.
And we're in a situation, I suppose, where we're definitely getting European elections for MEPs, but we're not definitely getting MEPs. So there's a sort of slight sense of, not jeopardy, but...
Well, it's a free hit, isn't it? Just go out, have a bit of fun with your ballot paper.
It's quite exciting. I think the Euro elections will be like, you know, a rerun of the referendum. We'll see what happens. Because the last time round, you know, it's all demographic, isn't it? You know, Brexit. The older you are in this country, the more likely you are to have a negative view of the EU. The younger you are, more likely to have a positive view. But the old people remember to vote. Because the polling booth the rest of the year is their care centre. I can't help but feel that if the polling station had been in the vape shop... We may have had a slightly different outcome.
If we don't know if we're getting... We've got the elections, but we don't know if we're actually going to end up, obviously, with MEPs. It might as well be a sort of gonzo vote. You know, you might as well cast your vote for, like, Jamie Cullum or Stacey Solomon, who I think would do a bang-up job, by the way.
Are they both standing?
I don't think they should have a choice. I think they should be forced to stand. This is the problem with politics. We let people choose whether or not they do it. And so you get the wrong type of people. You get careerists and people with overwhelming personal ambition. It needs to be dumped randomly on people's desks. It should be like jury service. You should get a letter through the letterbox. You are Foreign Secretary for the next 2 weeks. Whether you like it or not. And then you'll have to make up an excuse saying, no, I'm really busy at work. I can't.
It was a couple of days ago when the government announced that, yes, we're doing the EU elections. But I got my polling card 3 weeks ago.
It's like a sort of getting a save the date through the thing, isn't it? To save the date. We might be getting married, but we're... We're just having just doubts. So can you put it in your diary, but anything could happen.
The EU elections are good in the fact that, you know, they use proportional representation, so everybody actually gets to be represented. That's how UKIP have ended up really powerful in the EU.
Because it's the EU so undemocratic.
Yeah. That's right. The EU is so undemocratic, it gives people who hate the EU a voice.
Now, you don't have enough news of your own in America, so you must be absolutely... You must be absolutely gripped by the possibility of some people being elected here.
Oh, God, no, honestly, I'm really not enjoying this Brexit Infinity War program that you guys have on. Like, it's dragged out forever. I really hope Brexit Endgame is a lot more action-packed. It's just so weird to be in a rush to get on with a disaster, you know? It's like trying to struggle to get on the Titanic because, like, you've got an executive suite booked and the tickets are non-refundable. You have this amazing Groupon, you know? And I wouldn't put it past you guys because a lot of people are looking to take things back to the way things were before. And I mean, they've been successful. Like, measles are back. So, like, you really have to be...
It's what made this country great. The fear of measles built the empire.
I'm telling you, nobody would have broke the 1 minute mile if it wasn't for polio.
At last, someone's had the courage to say it.
This is the European elections, which are now definitely going ahead. The deadline to register for the EU elections was Tuesday the 7th of May, but you're not totally out of luck if you wish to participate. There are still a few weeks left for you to disseminate a series of wildly false claims online. David Lidington said the UK is legally bound to take part in the elections. Oh, come on, David, I'm legally bound to pay my TV licence, but do I? Not while the British Bias Corporation continues to spout its propaganda. I would rather go to jail. Hopefully one with Sky. Lidington is Theresa May's de facto deputy, which means that he's in charge if Theresa May is taken ill, and also for the 20 minutes every day when she locks herself in her airing cupboard and screams into a towel. Time's up, Theresa. Someone else needs to use the screaming towel.
It's good that she's got it down below an hour, though.
It's always nice to hear from David Lidington. You may know him as David Lidington, the Minister for the Cabinet Office, or simply as Lidington, the power behind the throne. Lidington, the iron fist inside a velvet glove. Lidington, a beacon in the darkness. Lidington, the only lighthouse of stability in the rough ocean of our ever-changing world. Lidington! The EU elections are provided... The EU elections are providing opportunities for former politicians to relive their glory days and, in UKIP's case, provide a supervised environment for troubled young men in which they can get off the dark web, take their hands out of their pants and leave the house for a few hours to scream from the upper deck of an open-top bus. If Brexit is completed before the 30th of June, the new elected MEPs won't ever take their seats and will be a lost generation of nearly MEPs, their lives forever in limbo. I was an MEP, you know, they'll say in the pub as the regulars shuffle their children away to the safety of the smoking area. I was on a leaflet once. 2 points to Andy. Desiree, take a listen to this. Desiree, which Game of Thrones has just got a new character?
Oh, well, so this is the news that the Duchess of Sussex, Meghan Markle, has had her baby. And I do have to say, because I was at home, well, talking to one of my friends back at home, and we're both black, and we were like, please let her give a black name. Please let her name it Kwame Asante Mountbatten Windsor. Like, she did not do that. She named him Archie Harrison. Harrison because he's a son of Harry, and Archie because he definitely came out with a tuft of red hair, just like the comic book character, right? Although there was some speculation, I think, that they called him Archie because Archie is a nickname for George, because apparently when you're posh, your nickname has nothing to do with your actual name. So I guess that means that Archie's nickname should be George. Although the problem with that is that the comic book character that relates to is Curious George, which is a monkey, which brings us to Danny Baker. It was unavoidable, so thank you for coming there with me, because he couldn't even let a day go by of her having this kid without posting this tweet of, like, a chimpanzee dressed up being, like, the royal baby. And he got fired from his radio gig at 5 Live, I think not because he made a racist comment on Twitter, but because he beat Prince Philip to the punch. It perplexes me, right, because first of all, Danny Baker said that he made this comment because he was commenting on the baby being posh. But it's a royal baby. It's supposed to be posh. If you've got, like, a janky royal baby, he's going to come out and be showing off, like, Buckingham Palace on MTV Cribs and, like, trying to wear Big Ben on a chain around his neck.
Oh, well, he was actually called Archie after the Archbishop of Canterbury. It's a lovely time. Yeah.
Specifically that Archbishop, not any of the other ones. That are
Thomas,
also...
Thomas of Becket, I think.
he got what he deserved. Well, 1,000 years later, too soon.
It's about time someone took him down a peg or two.
Andy, you need to move on.
Yeah.
He should have never been beatified. It's ridiculous.
Is he a prince already?
He's not going to be
anything. He's not got a title at the moment. Yeah, he'll just be called Master Archie Mountbatten Windsor, like a regular
George, straight out of the womb, instant prince.
Yeah.
And you've either got it or you haven't. I mean.
And I don't know, Danny Baker, I don't understand what possibly could have gone through his head. Like, I have no interest in the royal family, but I know three things about Meghan Markle. Yeah, I know she's an actress in a show called Suits. I know the British tabloids, since she's shown up on the scene, have tried to pitch her against Kate. And I know that she's black. Like, everybody knows that, like, what? I mean, that was my reaction. I was like, what? I mean, a couple of you around the table have been drinking with me on the road over the years, and I can get up to some mischief. But I've never thought, do you know what, I think there was a mixed-race baby born. I wonder if I'll just send a picture of a monkey out into the world. But where?
The defence was that he has done, like, these visual jokes before, used, like, similar photos, right, in his humour. But then, well, if it's a mixed-race baby, that's the time when you don't do that joke.
But it's
the one time.
It's not like it's not an extremely well-known, deeply offensive trope of anybody of African heritage to be likened to a monkey. You know, it's not as if we're talking about an obscure Uzbeki yurt player. And they've got him onto an obscure world music show. And he's gone, yes, I suppose baby will be cheeky monkey like his father. Ha, ha, ha. And then just the light goes off. Get him out of the studio. There's a guy who has some plausible deniability. The idea that a lifelong Millwall fan wouldn't know.
I thought a yurt was like a tent. Is that a musical instrument?
I know, but if you're very musical, yes, you can play one.
Okay.
It's about the tension in the guy rope.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If you really get those pegs in and you can just tune it down, you can have a beautiful, yeah.
And then, of course, depends on how high you pitch the roof of the tent gets different resonance.
You can only play it on your own if you've got very long arms, of course, because they're quite big, so you've got to be able to reach around.
Testify.
Thank you. We call it the harpsichord of the steps.
Just one thing that is very exciting about this royal baby, it means the Queen now has 8 great-grandchildren, which means she can have a straight knockout to decide her favourite one. Whereas, obviously, with 7, you either have to have a complicated round-robin system or some kind of unsatisfactory repêchage. But now, straight quarter-final, semi-final, final, bang, you're the one. Yeah. Which is how they should work out the succession to the throne.
This is Archie Harrison Mountbatten Windsor, who is the new royal baby and not a bit of the shipping forecast. If you ask me, Harry and Meghan have passed up the commercial opportunity of a lifetime to do a deal for the naming rights. Some might think it uncouth, but I wouldn't have any problem myself with the child being called the Sports Direct Royal Baby. The due date wasn't made public, but the press got their first clue that the baby had been born early on Monday morning when Nicholas Witchell was spotted frantically trying to milk a swan. During an interview with the press, Prince William welcomed Harry into the Sleep Deprivation Society, which is also what he calls his staff. Official photographs were taken in St George's Hall in Windsor Castle. BBC News said it's a special room for Harry and Meghan, as it's where they held their wedding reception. It's also where, in 2016, they held their first ever fight club. But let's not talk about that. Danny Baker has been at the centre of a race row and sacked by the BBC, who are usually more than happy to offer airtime to a plethora of avowed racists, but who really draw the line at racism against the royal family, which is, after all, the very worst kind of racism. Some conspiracy theorists claim a surrogate was used, but as we all know, the only artificial bumps on the royal estate are the ones that have been installed on the driveway to stop Philip doing donuts. 2 points to Desiree. Rachel, who's had a fall?
There has been a huge fall in the number of GPs in the UK. So it's quite big news. It's getting increasingly hard to get appointments, as we all know. But I think this is just completely unsurprising. I'm amazed that we have any left at all, given what a miserable existence it must be to be a GP. I mean, I think the thing that GPs mainly seem to have to contend with is people booking appointments almost purely to display their genitalia to a GP and ask the question, does this look all right? This genuinely happened to me, this is true. When I went to university, obviously, like, being away from home for the first time, I had the chance, like, to sort of go to a new doctor who had nothing to do with anyone I knew, and I took advantage of that. I was 18, and I booked an appointment with a GP, and I went to that GP, and I said, I want to show you my vagina, because I think there's something wrong with it. And she said, right, what do you think is wrong with it? And I said, I just think it looks quite odd. So she looked at my vagina and she said, what are you talking about? And I said, well, it just looks quite strange, doesn't it? Shape-wise and texturally. And she said, this is normal. This is what a vagina looks like. And I said, oh, right. Well, that's good to know.
I went into the GP about my vagina. Yeah.
This is the least surprising thing that's been said all evening.
No, I had the, can you check out me balls? And this is a man doctor, and he was incredibly rough. I mean, he...
That is so you don't keep coming back.
Considering he also had balls.
Was it like a tennis player getting tennis balls out of their pants? You know, when they...
Oh, if only.
Are you sure he was a GP?
What happened? He choked at my business so hard, I actually had to steady myself by putting my hands on his shoulders.
This programme has become eerily like Question Time. Yeah. I think it's great that GP numbers have dropped. I think it's great. I think we need, ideally, none in the country. Because when you look at it, economically, people living as unhealthily as possible is the only thing keeping this country afloat. Because we can't afford pensions, so we need more and more people to live as unhealthily as possible, to drink themselves to early graves. That's who the Queen should be giving knighthoods to. She shouldn't be giving gongs to people for doing well at the Olympics. She should be going around hospices, doling out knighthoods to bed-bound boo-sound, saying, thanks for taking a hit for the team, you're the real hero. It's all about bottom-line economics. I'm a child of Osborne.
This is the NHS, which has seen the first sustained fall in GP numbers for 50 years. And as the NHS knows, once you've had one fall, that really is the beginning of the end. Time to look at a home. It's got to the stage where you're actually better off going to a vet. I got an appointment the same day, was dealt with swiftly and professionally, and got a fetching cone to stop me licking the stitches where my balls used to be. And I'm happy to tell you, that cough has cleared right up. To try and help matters, I've taken things into my own hands, popping on a long white coat and turning up at surgeries, dispensing advice and indeed medication. Current stats, 6 deaths, 2 comas, 1 Netflix documentary. Another solution that I've personally thought of is taking routine procedures out of the surgery and into the home. I've been checking my own prostate once a day for 3 months and I have never felt more happy. Or alone. Northern Ireland has seen a rise in GPs, but then when you're being politically represented by Arlene Foster, I suppose you have to make sure you have plenty of qualified practitioners on hand, if only to keep her from trepanning the demons out of anyone caught sneezing on a Sunday. 2 points to Rachel. And at the end of round one, the scores are Andy and Desiree have 4, and so too do Rachel and Andrew. We start round 2 with a special Mother's Day offering from Iceland Air.
Forget the flowers this year and send your mum on an inspiring travel adventure. Flights from the US to Reykjavik, $149. One way.
Thanks to Vivian Vignol for sending us that. Andy, take a listen to this.
Come on.
Let's talk about sex, baby.
Andy, who... Can't believe we've stumbled upon your walk-on music. Here he is.
Will you please welcome the committee stylings of... Yeah. Andy, who's gone off getting off?
Well, this is the proposed new Scottish national anthem. Nicola Sturgeon today gave a speech on the Scottish exit from the United Kingdom, or sex for short. And this song perfectly exemplifies what you should do before a referendum. Talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. And it's good that we've learned the lessons from what we didn't do before Brexit.
It's true. It's true. We just got drunk and did it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, so that's absolutely what you think the story is about.
Absolutely not. Well, there was coincidentally also a report out this week that says that British people are having much less sex than we used to, which is a good sign of this nation getting back on track. And it also shows yet again how out of touch the royal family are with normal people. Firing babies out left, right and centre. It also shows that finally, with Brexit, we are focusing our attentions once again on becoming a great global trading nation and saying, not tonight, darling, I'm negotiating a unilateral trade deal with Paraguay. Because when Britain was the most powerful nation in the world, sex was something that was emphatically done as an absolute last resort. That's what made us great as a nation. Would we have explored the world and shared the wonders of Britishness, if I may give a slightly questionable history of empire in one sentence? Done that if we'd been busy thrunkling each other's manjanas? No, we would not. Would we have discovered renowned continents such as America, Asia, Africa and Australia, which had never been set foot on by any other human being before the Brits arrived, if we'd been focused on genitalicular confrostications with and self-indulgent carnalitis frobbles? No. In fact, the decline of this country, Miles, can be directly traced to the legalisation of the willy in 1903. Which came shortly after the death of Queen Victoria, of course, who was extremely sceptical about such matters. And also, you have to think about the context is, why are people in Britain enjoying the gift of love less than... And, well, according to the Magna Carta, nighttime... Which, coincidentally, is Miles' safe word. According to the Magna Carta, nighttime is the right time to be with the one you love. And what's on at night? The news, news night, question time. That is one way to kill the mood. What was that you said, darling? You want to have what you all what's a course? Certainly not. I've just seen a harrowing documentary about biodiversity. Can we not just have a cuddle and a cry? I just think that a sense of intergenerational betrayal is a real passion killer, and that is what is driving copulation rates down in this country. And also, you know, still, sex is, I mean, it's something that traditionally we British people we're not comfortable talking about. You know, I went to an all-boys private school, and sex education at my school basically involved a 55-year-old single man talking to a room full of teenage hereditary stockbrokers. Telling them how at some point in their lives a gentleman will be expected to frunkle his drunkle rod into a lady's gagrooch so that his spermatids may sexgotiate the fallopiated troops and eventually imperfletate the overegg whilst blushing an increasingly crimson shade of beetroot before jumping into a cupboard, slamming the door shut and shouting, "Beware the way of the boob! No good can possibly come of it! Now get out there and play some rugby until this filth is out of your system." And that's what's kept our birth rate down in this country.
Similarly, I went to a girls' school, which I don't know if that's surprising. I know I come across as a massive virgin. And I went to a girls' school, and our sex education consisted purely of being educated on how not to get knocked up. That was all it was, which I have to say I am still nailing.
As a third-party observer...
that's another reason people are having less sex, isn't it?
is simple stage fright. do you feel that British people are sort of prudish about this? And is there something about our national characteristic that you think makes us less likely to be having as much sex as Andy once was?
No, I mean, I think that if you really were serious about sex, you would drink less and you would stop gardening, because also, TV's really good. So,
if you see someone with a messy front garden, do you automatically think, oh, look at Mr. Lover-Lover? Someone's closing the curtains in the afternoon.
All right, it's Mark's turn it out a bit, mate.
This is a survey that shows that British people are having less sex than in recent years. It's just something that you need to make time for, perhaps make a fun routine. For me, when the shipping forecast is on, so am I. Relate counsellor and sex therapist Peter Saddington confirmed putting a date in the diary can help. It can help, Peter, but what happens when you have to move your sex appointment because of unforeseen circumstances, such as a European election? I'm in tears here, Peter. Leave means leave. Lead researcher Professor Kay Welling said those most affected are in their midlife, the so-called sandwich generation, which are people often juggling work, childcare, and the fact that after a hard day at work, sometimes you just want to have a nice sandwich and a pants-on spoon. 2 points to Andy. Desiree, which tourist brought home a stick of rock?
Oh, so this was a guy who, I guess, now lives in Florida, but he has a piece of Stonehenge that he has now returned to English Heritage Society, who cares for Stonehenge. Apparently, he used to, in the 50s, work for this diamond cutting company, and they were charged with boring into Stonehenge because it was cracking, and they needed to reinforce it with rods. And when they bored into it, they had these little plugs that came out, and he just picked up one of those plugs and pocketed it, which is surprising, because you always expect diamond companies to act ethically. So, can't believe he did that. But he took it home, and apparently now that he's on the eve of his 90th birthday, he's returned it because he doesn't need it anymore to, like, woo Floridian retirees with, like, hey, you want to come back to my place and see my Stonehenge? You know, I guess that works for him now. And it's good that he's returning it, because that's not the kind of thing you can, like, bequeath to a grandson, you know? Because, like, your little hippie grandson is either going to try to turn it into a bong or a reusable straw or something. Like, he's not going to do anything good with it. But he essentially stole from work, right? And it's not like a ream of paper or a stapler. You know, that's the equivalent of like stealing a hard drive or a whole printer or something like that. He walked up with a whole piece of Stonehenge in his pocket. No one stopped him. Like, he's a white dude. Surely someone should have been like, I see an 8-inch rod in your pocket. Like, that ain't yours. Whatever it is. It's just not, like, empty him, you know? I can't believe he got away with that.
Do you think this sort of thing is acceptable? This
I don't know why I wasn't asked about the sex question. Let's all move on. Like, as if I haven't got a few words to say about whether people are getting a good rattle or not.
I was trying to read your body language, and you were sitting on your hands. But now, of course, I realise that's... talk to us about sex before we move
No. It's a beautiful thing. You know, it's... I wish I'd had less. Anyway... Stonehenge is beautiful, it's fantastic, but it's no Avebury. Every time I hear Stonehenge, I just think of the people in Avebury going, hello, we've got one of them, and you can drive through it. It's a much nicer henge. I think it's very good. And the one in Avebury, like, there's a couple of decent country pubs, like, actually in it. And like I said, there's a road straight through it. You know, it's... Years ago, me and another comedian, we went to, you know, because the first time you come to England and you go to Stonehenge, you don't realise that they've built a major road right beside it. The unfeeling beasts, right? There's a major road. And we went, let's go visit Stonehenge. Have you done it? No, I haven't done it. So you go in and you pay in, right? There's the outside fence. You can see Stonehenge. Then you pay in and you think you will then get to be near Stonehenge. They then just put you in a slightly closer fence, which you paid the privilege to do. It was us, an entire coachload of retired Japanese people. And we were all just peering through the chicken wire at Stonehenge in the distance. And just to liven it up, we told this Japanese retired people that it wasn't the real Stonehenge. Of course, it couldn't be, for safety reasons. This is a styrofoam replica. And the real Stonehenge is safely in a museum. And the interpreter went down the line and told everybody, right? And they're all like, I don't know. I don't know if that's true. No, 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 seriously. If we all blow together, we'll be at least able to get the nearest henge to wobble. So me, Rob, and 80 retired Japanese people just went...
Wouldn't it have been fabulous if it had worked?
Well, we were all dizzy. Something moved.
Clearly, people have done that before, because half of the stones are on the ground, aren't they? It just shows what great lung power people had back in the 18th century. They can actually blow a henge down. Yeah. Do you not think the quality of henges in this country has really hit the skids, though? Because we just don't make... You've got Avery quality henge, as you say. We've got,
great henge.
Stonehenge still, top-notch henge. What have we done recently?
What's the definition of a henge? Is there any set of circular standing stones?
It's none of your business.
Sorry, and I withdraw that question. It was impertinent.
Well, so Stonehenge doesn't work anymore. It's a non-functioning henge. I've tried it. Didn't work at all. I think we need a new henge, like a lithium-ion henge for the 21st century.
100%. Or we need to open up Silbury Hill. What's in there?
Yeah, what are they hiding?
What have they got in there?
So many burning questions.
One of them is... It is amazing, actually, that he was able to get away with that. Like, the fact that... No one. Someone must have been like, "Oh, you're innocently taking a bit of Stonehenge away," and then he immediately moved to Florida, which isn't like an unsuspicious thing to do. You know, are you taking a bit of henge to Florida with you? I don't know if he was like, "No, this is a perfectly normal, it's a perfectly normal things to do." You know, last week I took some pebbles from the Jurassic Coast on a city break to Bruges. You know, it's an unusual act.
Yeah. It's almost a great British compromise as well, Stonehenge, because the stones. Yeah. Are managed by English Heritage, and the ground underneath the stones is managed by the National Trust. And they could have really kicked off about it and had a proper land battle, but they didn't. They just thought there must be a way around it. It's nice, I think, when people can reach a sort of compromise without...
What really annoys me about this story is that this guy just kept it in his private collection, and we Brits know the correct thing to do when you've nicked a load of stones from another country is you put them in a museum.
Yeah.
They're hoping they'd be able to find out where these stones... came from.
I think they came from the ground.
The ground?
But then I've always been a bit sciencey.
So they haven't tested it yet. So as far as we know, it could just be some concrete from the Waterloo skate park.
Yeah, it could well be that. I mean, I hope it doesn't turn out that it's from the Acropolis again. The initial results suggest that, in fact, the Sarsen stones at Stonehenge didn't all come from one place. They came from more than one location. So it turns out that the great British tradition of shopping around for a bargain dates back thousands and thousands of years. Really, when they're putting up, thinking, oh, well, all these places offering a free sample stone, maybe we'll just get 50 of them and build a henge out of that lot.
This is Stonehenge, where a missing piece has been returned 60 years after it was taken. English Heritage hope to collect and reinsert the other two missing cores, at which point Stonehenge will finally become the fully functional laser cannon it was always designed to be, and fulfil its destiny to destroy the moon and end the tides. Robert Phillips returned the piece on the eve of his 90th birthday. Mr. Phillips was reluctant to bring the core back until now, as it gave him untold mystical powers. The ability to fly, control the ocean, and get 20% off at all English Heritage gift shops. Cracking conserves, but at what price? I personally know the guilt that Robert must have been feeling. I once stole a piece of Roman mosaic on a school trip to Bath and was then haunted by the ghost of a centurion throughout my teenage years until I vanquished him by piercing his heart with a Viking broadsword that I had to steal from Sutton Hoo. Then I was haunted by a Viking who I had to kill with a Saxon longbow that I stole from the British Museum, and me and the Saxon ghost really got on. I'm not sure what the moral of the story is, really. Just do something every day that scares you. 2 points to Desiree. Rachel, who's sick of tourists clogging up their country?
The Netherlands are. They have said that they are hoping to spread tourists out to like less visited parts of the Netherlands. They don't want them concentrated in the more popular parts. Like, come see the majestic splendour of this car park in Gogh. I just think it's quite funny. It's like if the British Tourist Board stopped mentioning the Cotswolds and focused more on Toddington services.
Andrew, you've probably been to Amsterdam.
I have been to Amsterdam, yeah. for all sorts of business reasons.
Is this a necessary move, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. The whole world's being overrun by tourists. They ruin the ambience. They ruin everything. Just pottering around, making small talk, eating spag ball. Rubbish.
Weeks ago, I was with you shouting your way through a small ski resort in Austria, tramping through the pavements on ski shoes while eating a strudel out of your hand. Do you feel like you're part of the problem?
How do you answer to these charges, Andrew?
I was wearing lederhosen at the time. Yeah. Did you know the Dutch are the second largest exporter of food in the world? Whoa. After the US? It's unbelievable, isn't it?
What do they make?
They make everything. On every
really?
Tiny little scrap of their reclaimed land.
What Dutch things will I have eaten today?
Cheese.
My breakfast gouda. Was that from Holland?
Your breakfast gouda. Well, do you think, like, just what an economic powerhouse Britain could be if most of the land wasn't owned by 1% of hereditary bastards from 1,000 years ago?
Is this about Thomas A. Becket again?
This is our dear friends at the Dutch Tourist Board, who, due to overcrowding, have decided to stop promoting the Netherlands as a holiday destination. Unfortunately, Amsterdam's Tourist Board failed in their previous tactic of putting people off the city by filling it with open urinals and violently drunk English stag parties. Visit Britain has been inspired by the success of the Dutch and has launched its own poster campaign, bearing the slogan, "If it's taking drugs next to a canal you want, you need look no further than the entirety of the Midlands." 2 points to Rachel.
Point of information.
Andy.
The Netherlands are not second in the most.
Sorry,
food
have you
exported.
Been on your phone during. I'm not saying that's unprofessional. Yeah. I know it's very.
However, they are sixth, which is still pretty amazing. Yeah.
Surely Andrew Maxwell is more reliable than the so-called internet.
Yeah, fair point, fair call.
In all fairness, I get a call at least 4 times a day from Google asking me.
Andrew, who's buzzing about their test results? There are blank expressions, and then there are yours. That was incredible.
No, I was just, you know, sometimes your questions are deliberately, you know, shady, aren't they? You're trying to throw me off, and then I'm trying to think of an answer while answering. The thing is something to do with wasps. They've worked out that the wasps are actually good thinkers. The wasps have a power of deduction that we thought only humans had. And it turns out the wasps have it too. It's basically if A is bigger than B and you're C, then B is also bigger than you. I haven't explained it well because I'm not a wasp.
I mean, they're incredible, aren't they? Well, apparently, wasps are the second biggest exporters of food. in the world.
No, do you know what? I absolutely love wasps.
That is a sentence you don't hear very often.
No, I'll tell you why. Because they've really had a lot of headwind to fly into. And the wasp is the original fella. Both bees and ants are a descendant of wasps. Wasps.
I feel like we're on controversial ground here.
Do you ever find yourself saying that sentence quite loudly while other people are saying, "Can you be quiet, Andrew? We're trying to play darts."
The bee is evolved from the wasp, and it only came along with the flowering plant. So the bee.
After Brexit, we'll be able to get rid of the bees and the ants and just get British wasps back. Is that right?
If the wasp wants it, it's got to take its country back.
Don't forget to vote. But the point is, it's a marvellous beast, and it turns out, on top of everything else, it's as smart as a dolphin now. It also wasn't originally called wasps. In Middle English, they were called waps. And then it got turned around. And
Who turned it around? Was it Thomas A. Becket?
Probably. Sickens
me. That man's charge sheet.
I think we pretty much got on top of the news this week, didn't we?
This is wasps, who, it turns out, have the power of reason. Sadly, this means that wasps are cleverer than bees. But bees have a much better personality, and that, at the end of the day, is what counts. This is another example of animals turning out to be smarter than we think. For example, all of tonight's jokes have been written by horses. Thank you, Captain Sugarlumps. Wait for me outside. Hope you brought your oyster. We're going on the bendy bus.
In the study, the wasps were taught a hierarchy of five colours labelled A, B, C, D and E, and within only a few hours they were spelling out death to our human oppressors. 2 points to Andrew. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share? Andy?
This comes from Barry Freeman in Shaftesbury, an online horse racing results website. Said this, the 1540 at Wetherby has a non-runner. Never give in.
Desiree.
So this is from Imogen Franklin in Bristol, who saw this advert on the National Trust's website. Fresh air, crisp mornings, and birdsong. Get away from it all at our camping sites.
Rachel.
This is to the membership of the Real Ale Society of Leicester. Dear Anthony, as one or two eagle-eyed members have pointed out, there was a minor error in the earlier newsletter. I'd like to confirm that this week's branch meeting will feature a pub crawl around Syston rather than the pub brawl originally suggested.
Andrew.
This is from Wasp News. This is from Stu Wilkie in Auckland, New Zealand. Flat earthers hold conference in Auckland with speakers from all around the globe.
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Rachel and Andrew have 8, but this week's winners are Andy and Desiree with 9. Before we leave you, here is a leaflet promoting an open day at RNAS Yeovilton, sent to us by Nick Wood.
The Royal Navy's Fleet Air Arm will open their gates to up to 40,000 visitors for a magnificent 5-hour flying display. Come and meet our armed forces personnel and see their equipment up close.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the News Quiz Extra were Andy Zaltzman, Desiree Birch, Rachel Paris and Andrew Maxwell. In the chair was Miles Jupp and the news was read by me, Alan Smith. The chair script was written by Gabby Hutchinson-Crouch, Robin Morgan and Benjamin Partridge, with additional material by Catherine Brickworth, Adele Cliff and Kat Sadler. The producer was Sarah Sharp and it was a BBC Studios production.